right on cue, the mascara. Loved it. Anyway, thank you, Salvador. That was, like, really fabulous. You know, I also want to thank George Lipschitz for just being a dynamic man and, to me, just a living legend and an icon to me and to many others as well. I love the fact that this is, like, a real intimate crowd. I appreciate it. And with, you know, Salvador's introduction, I almost feel like I don't even need to add anything because he pretty much laid it all out. And I would like us to be able to feel free to have interaction and dialogue. So it would be really nice if you have any questions as I go along to just kind of join in, and we'll have more like a conversation than an artist talk, because since we are in such an intimate setting, I think I would really rather get into maybe issues that you're more interested in rather than just hearing me go off on like a bunch of prints, which I can also do. But anyway, the Altered States title is drawn from a piece I did titled Altered State, which is the lead image that's on the poster and the first image on the exhibition that you see coming up the hallway. That piece, I will have to look at, since you're the archivist, you probably know what year I did that, right? Like 1999? 1999 or something like that. Okay, you know, yeah. But anyway, that piece, even in 1999, that was part of, you know, I'll get into, like, the whole Atelier program at South Palp Graphics is a silkscreen program. And I happen to be one of the founders of the Atelier program with a nun that used to be the director of the place, Sister Karen Boclero. And this is way, way back in the day, in the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, when I first met Sister Karen. And that was kind of weird, because some of you that may have heard me either talk about Catholicism in the past, you could tell that I have real interesting kind of perspective on it, or I would say an unpopular culture kind of perspective on all of that. So when I heard there was a nun running this crazy art center in East LA, I really wanted nothing to do with it, because I knew what, you know, a lot of those people were up to. But one day on the corner of Brooklyn and Gage, where the place was housed for many decades, at the building, at the bottom corner store, it used to be a Bible shop. Mm-hmm. So the whole building was owned by the archdiocese, so this whole kind of Catholic that, like, they, you know, they conquer and buy and steal land from everybody. And they had this building. So on the corner downstairs, there was this Bible shop, and I knew that, like, in the 70s, kind of hippie kind of days or whatever, and what I liked is they had a lot of rosaries, and on the rosaries they had glass beads, Italian glass beads. So I would do these beads. So I would basically go into the Bible shop to go buy rosaries for the beads. And I would like, so I would go in there, and my thing, what I would do is I would basically get the rosary, like yank off the crucifix and skid it into the nearest gutter as I would, like, take the beads, the glass beads, and make, like, necklaces and earrings and kind of barter. So I always had to barter for my art materials. So I would make earrings and necklaces in exchange for paintbrushes and tubes of paint. So that was kind of one of those things. And I think after going in there and you know, selecting colors of beads and not actually doing my prayers, one of the mean priests kind of got wind on it, and it was starting to 86 me from the Bible shop. Like, I was no longer welcome to go into the Bible shop. But I still needed some red. There was, like, these beautiful red beads that I wanted. So it's kind of this whole deal. So I was trying to make a deal with some guy that was going to a hardware store. Can you please go buy that rosary from me? Because I'm not allowed. I've been 86 from the Bible shop, you know, and I'll go get you the, you know, and I know you're not allowed in the hardware store anymore, so I'll go pick up, you know. So we kind of made this deal. And then, you know, just making deals. You know, we're making art, making deals. And so I'm waiting in the parking lot for, you know, most people are, you know, exchange, you know, buying guns and heroin and all this stuff, and I'm changing rosary beads and screws, you know, in the same parking lot. And as I'm waiting for the guy to, you know, do whatever he was doing in the Bible shop, I'm waiting in the parking lot, and all of a sudden I see, I don't know who this is, and someday I'll identify this guy if he's still around, but I see someone running down the stairs, and, like, with the portfolio under his arm, and the guy literally falls to his knees, and his art, like, drawings go flying on the floor, right? So it's kind of this weird scene. So this guy was really upset flying. There was a flight of stairs. And the guy, so I'm down there, I'm helping the guy, and the guy has tears rolling down his face. I don't know who he is. And I guess he just came from a critique of his artwork from Sister Karen, who was really brutal, right? This woman was like really a brutal nun. And I thought it was really funny because I had not met her yet. I've heard the stories of her, but I thought it was really. And then I remember helping the guy up, and he had tears in his face, and his work was all smudged, and he was running off scared. And then, just then, I look up, and it was kind of like we used to call it a penguin, like in that movie, The Blues Brothers. You remember the nun that was like really mean, and it was like really hilarious because I look up. And out the door comes this lady. She's a chain smoker, so she'd be smoking a cigarette. And she's looking at me really mean, like, hey, you're not supposed to be helping that guy out, right? So I thought, all of a sudden, I go, any woman that could put fear into this crazy cholo and make him go home crying, I go, I got to meet this lady. So that was kind of my introduction to this Sister Karen. So at that time also, so this is like in the late 70s, and then by the 80s is like when the music scene, some of you that heard some of my talks, the music scene was happening, and I would go to any venue where there was music and art. Oh, I'll just throw this up so you don't have to. So I get to self-help graphics around 70-something, 80, start kind of trying to figure out what's going on there. And I find that, it was kind of weird that people were really scared of this lady because she was a nun. But I didn't have that fear, so because I didn't, play that game. So it was like really kind of interesting. So we ended up becoming kind of sparring partners because she was kind of trying to challenge me. I was trying to challenge her. But at the same time, I was trying to find a place where we had a common ground. And then it turned out it was printmaking where we had a common ground. I have a strong printmaking background from offset printing with my dad, records and labels, and all that kind of stuff in art department there. And then she was well-studied in art, and she studied printmaking in Italy some years ago. So that's how we joined at the mines, and the whole concept of a fine art printmaking program started kind of taking form, was up there in between Vex gigs. I would go into her office when we were kind of laying the groundwork for this atelier program. So that's kind of how the whole atelier program started many, many years ago. So when I stand here in this institution with these people X amount of years later and see this collection up here, to me it really, really, really means a lot because it's something that I put like a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of fights, a lot of people to get to the point where, the fine art prints are treated with respect, at a certain level and a caliber that they are treated here in this particular location, because they should be, it's a lot of work. And throughout the time, I also actually mentored and taught, because I was teaching color separation. I would do color separation for a living. I always supported my own work, and throughout the years, I did a lot of color separation, a lot of times in apparel, so it'll be like for clothing, sometimes for fine art prints also, and then eventually also with self-help graphics, teaching a lot of the early artists about color separation. So starting with the altered state piece, this is already later. I think the atelier program started around 1982 or 83. So it took a couple years to get it off the ground. And then I think I first participated in 83 because the first one, we're still working out bugs on the program. But so X amount of years later, when we get to 99, what happened also, like in so many other institutions, is it's all very male dominant. So even in the self-help graphics and with the atelier program, it would be mostly men. It would be mostly male artists. It would be like this thing is like heavy-handed male guy, mostly guys printing, mostly guys getting chosen, mostly guys getting the studios. It was always guys. So at a certain point, I think in 99, is when they started the Maestras program, mm-hmm. female program. And that was basically in order to try to make some sort of balance in the amount and the volume of the work that was coming out. So in this particular, I forget what the name of the actual series was. I think Irina Cervantes curated this particular, Sirwana something other. Once again, a nun. And my kind of, this whole thing. So I could work with the title, but when you pick a theme, it's kind of, some people could work with themes, and sometimes it's kind of difficult. So I know Irina Cervantes, who was a curator for this particular body of suite of prints, the Sirwana thing, I wasn't real familiar with that person really well, but I knew it had something to do with Catholicism. and cat, you know, a nun. Once again, there's a nun. And then, so what I decided to do was do this piece here, the altered state piece, where I kind of took the concept of similarities between hardcore Catholicism and hardcore sadomasochism, and trying to like put the comparisons together. And this what this piece kind of run is kind of dealing with, like you know, just some real severities, like people that are into worship and pain and bondage and like severity and extremes and dedication, which I find hardcore Catholicism and hardcore sadomasochism both have. And then also it was at a time, and this was a little bit before the whole like exposure of all these like, you know, thousands of years of pedophile priests and all this stuff. So when this particular, when I did this piece kind of addressing those issues about those kind of like in like psychopathic behaviors on this planet Earth, this piece was not, I mean, it was, you know, they knew it was a good print as far as the technical aspect of a tight color separation with multiple layers, and which is what I do, but the theme itself kind of threw people off. So I thought that was kind of interesting, because when this piece first came out, what they would normally do with an atelier, you know, it's X amount of artists during an X amount of group, and it goes on exhibitions around town. And what happened with this particular piece, this piece got censored from a few shows, so my work was not included in a lot of the exhibitions. And I think, well, you know, okay, join the club. Here I go again, getting censored once again. But I thought it was a pretty tight piece. But anyway, so that's kind of, I thought it was a real fun piece. But as far as like the technical aspect of printmaking, this is a real difficult piece. It was a real, real large piece. Color separation, if some of you know it, it's about layering color and blocking out, and each color has a separate layer. So we're actually multiplying layers and layers. And then I work in either amberlith or ink, and it's real tight stuff. It's like a very focused, concentrated medium. It's not like painting, which is more free flow. You know, every medium is different. The camera is something different, drawing something different. But when it comes to silkscreen hand color separation, which I've been doing since I was a little kid, it takes like a real skill, a fine eye, total concentration, and also a lot of thought, because you're trying to look ahead of what a piece is going to look like before it's actually printed. So this whole thing about layering color, I think this piece might be like a 6 or 9 color run. But if you understand color, transparency, opaque, and overlaying color, you could take like 9 colors and turn it into something like 30 colors if you really know how you're playing it, and which is something I try to do with this. And so I'm real happy with the overall approach on this piece, you know. And I think, you know, just knowing that color separation was really, really tight. I don't know if anybody has any questions. Then you jump forward to 2009, so that's like X amount of years later. This is another piece I did. By this time, South Hall history has taken some real serious turns. It had been shut down, you know. It had been shut down in 2005 for some reasons that people are still kind of not wanting. You know, like I said, it's like a contagious code of silence. No one wants to talk about this scandal that went on there. But anyway, the place was shut down. And there's kind of changing of the guard. There's like a lot of people that have been hijacking the art scene, and they just going in there basically trying to control things. And I know that South Pop happened to be part of that whole scene that's kind of in action right now, real unfortunate action. But and also, since the building was owned by the Archdiocese, which takes me back to the original concept and the original photo, that was a time when, yes, the exposure of these psychopath pedophiles kind of got exposed. And by that time, they were having to pay a lot of lawsuits in a lot of this pedophilia stuff. So by that time, Archdiocese was selling property to pay their debt, their sex debt, pretty much. And Self-Help Graphics Building happened to be one of those buildings that ended up being sold to pay the pedophile debt. So therefore, I think here in Santa Barbara also there was a home for aged nuns that also had to get sold. So they still, once again, still treating children and people and women really quite corrupt. So it gets, you know, so it kind of ties into, it's like really weird how I did create this piece about this stuff, then in fact our work would also, you know, this whole thing happening with the artwork. So this piece in 2009, by then there was a changing of the guard, the place went down, the building was being sold, but I was, a new director came in, but I was asked to curate because they were really running on a really skeleton crew, but they needed somebody in there that also knew kind of the ropes and stuff. So I was asked to curate, and I was sort of hesitant because I wasn't sure who was playing, you know, who was involved and all that stuff, but I kind of also knew that this was probably going to be one of the last times we'd be using this address for self-help graphics location. So I saw it as an opportunity to actually make a piece that would be archived, like it's here, and taken care of, where I actually had the old address on my print. And so it was kind of like a last kind of hooray with self-help graphics and doing that. And unlike the other print that was like 12 colors, this one I think I only did three or four color. So I did, there's like a kind of like an illusion, there's an under, like, okay, look at, I do get to use this little thing, I didn't think I was going to use it. Okay, like in there, the turquoise part, that's one image, right? So there's actually, I call that the invisible artist, so it's a self-portrait thing that I do. And so it's like an image on top of an image, and I've never really played with that before, but in this case, I kind of figured it'd probably be one of the last times I run a print with self-help graphics, let me play with a different style I've never done before. So that's the invisible artist image. And I use it, turquoise. And Sister Karen, that was like her favorite color. So this was kind of like an honoring Sister Karen, who's no longer with us. But I also did like this really kind of creepy image because she was kind of cool and creepy at the same time. And then and it's like really funny. And then, of course, using something more graphic. I went for, even though it is a fine art piece, I also knew it was more like a promotional image for the Dia de los Muertos, for the Day of the Dead. So I was able to take a medium, which I've done doing the fine art, and I do consider this a fine art print, but it is definitely more in the style of old posters or radical kind of like protest posters or stuff like that. So I took like even a different model and I try to apply it to this particular piece. And I'm real happy with the way this came out. So that was kind of interesting. Revelation Revolution, which is another piece which I'm really happy with. Once again, technical aspect, a really tight piece, a really, you know, here I'm dealing, once again, I've done a stuff like this is more like architectural pattern. I'm playing with patterns up and down here, playing with color, obviously, with eyes. And then somebody else mentioned something about the gender. Was it? I did this wonderful interview just before I walked in here with your Chicana radio. On 91.9. Yeah, they made me do a little promo thing, and I couldn't get it because I'm such a pocha. I couldn't roll my R. So it was so funny. But these girls are so fantastic. I just did this like fabulous interview with these girls. So you were talking about the gender and kind of the bodies, and she was asking about like the bodies and Karen. Oh, it was actually you were referring to Karen's piece, so maybe I can introduce it to you later. But the piece that you wrote about the gender and body politics, and I think in this piece it really shows because people will take it for what it is, but then people will very often ask, is that a man? Is that a woman? You know, that kind of thing. And I think it's just kind of funny that the art kind of triggers that.
I had a question in this regard. Now, you gave a talk a while ago, last time you came, and you mentioned that you had worked with, I think it was the one over in the engineering building to one of the classes, and you had mentioned that you'd worked with kind of runaway adolescents. At what was the place called?
Probably the homeless shelter you're talking about?
Covenant House.
And I was given the impression that some of those people there had been on the streets and having to do sexual favors.
Yes.
And that some of them were men that were doing sexual favors. And I'm wondering, you know, is there a little bit of influence with kind of transvestite and the sexual favors and kind of that kind of sexual exploitation of men?
I mean, that is a fact that I did. I work at all kinds of jobs, you know, and like I said, from what people would consider underprivileged people and other jobs which I consider overprivileged people as well. You know, so I run the gamut. So, you know, but that, what you're talking about, no, that didn't really inspire my work per se, but what it has done is, like, has also put me face to face in real live time, in real reality that's happening in our world today, which is homeless so many more homeless than we've ever had. Right now, we're hitting like an all-time high of like homeless people. I see, you know, women homeless people, youth are just, you know, people. The youth suicide rate right now is at an all-time high that we've never had in this country or the world since we've been keeping record. Or maybe those records are also being erased. So maybe it has happened in the past, but I don't know. But no, it hasn't really, I don't say it really necessarily influenced my work, but I think, if anything, my work, I think, helped open communication with maybe some of those students that didn't really feel comfortable talking to others at a particular time. So because they're in a very traumatic place, they're very young. You know, most of them aged out of the foster care system. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the ones that I work with, they're just basically aged out of already a very bad system since they were really, really young, being yanked out of families. You know, putting and like I said, aged out, meaning it was like between 16 and 20. We would sometimes go from 14 to 24 if we could squeeze kids in, depending on how many beds are available. So these are kids that have already been severely traumatized in their own world, you know. And I think if anything, I was there just trying to help them deal, you know, by no means was I any kind of like a cure or anything, but if anything, an outlet for them to at least really let some steam out. And art was used as a tool for them to either articulate something that they maybe aren't even near ready to talk about or know how to talk about, or maybe the, you know, the play. So I wouldn't say that that they influenced me per se. Did that answer your question? I think so. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, but you get the point where I'm getting at. Yeah. This one, 90? Is that what that says?
90. Yeah.
Okay. But I was just kind of intrigued by you were saying that part of your... you felt that part of your artwork was reaching out to those people that have been traumatized by being out on the streets.
Yeah, I did. There was another body of work that I did show at Campbell Hall. There was a couple of color images that, and those, that group of students, amazing group of students that I did try to take them. A lot of people, like I'm living in LA, and I think I mentioned to the girls earlier this afternoon, is that in that particular shelter, which was in Hollywood, you have so many people from across the country coming to Hollywood because they all want to be a star, you know, and all they end up with is like either becoming a porn star. I think it's weird if you get into porn, you're all of a sudden a star. I mean, that's like just like a weird concept already. But a lot of them were getting into pornography, and the only stars they would see is when they would get popped in the face, and they would be see stars before they pass out or something. So it's like this whole kind of illusion of like pop culture and how, you know, you watch TV and all of a sudden you think, you know, you could, you know, put a little rubber band around your waist and all your fat is gone or something. It's like weird, the brainwashing that happens in television. And so I dealt with a lot of kids that were coming from other places and ending up in Hollywood. And yeah, that was like real severe. And I think you kind of get the picture of where this goes. It's like not a good place, because I would say I would have an average of one or two or three of my students ending up getting murdered. So I would have my kids were coming up dead. And I think that's like probably one of the ugliest Hollywood secrets is snuff films, because they just love that stuff in Hollywood as well. There's big money in sex trade with children globally, you know. And but anyway, let's go. Yeah, I'll take it on to. Let's take it a little bit different, because that I could go there forever.
But anyway, from your talk, that's the impression that I got. Well, Megan, and you said that you had used your art to reach out to somebody.
Yeah, I did. I did.
So I'm thinking here, you're saying, you're admitting, yeah, this is real stuff.
Yeah, it is real stuff. And I was getting at some of the images that I showed. So I did work with them, and I did professional artwork with them at my friend Francesco Siqueiros at El Nopal Press. He's a printmaker. So I took him on a field trip anytime to get them out of that environment and take them into someplace nice. And Francesco is really good with working with people. And I know Francesco, and I had a few bucks, and I like to share the bucks when I have them. And I took a field trip to his place. He does lithography printing. And I took a group of kids there, and we had 100% rag paper, everything professional, like, you know, like the best kind of paper you could think of, the studio you could think of, an expert running the press, myself teaching them, and a couple other people. And we did and just for them to get out and experience a different kind of environment, a studio, an actual working studio. And the kids did prints, and they didn't really, you know, if anything, it was more about the experience more than the actual artwork itself. And then I found when I brought the artwork back and the students back, they called them clients, but I don't like calling them clients. That just gets, that leave that to the shrinks to call them clients. You know, I wasn't doing that at all. But, and then I had all this artwork, and then it was one of those things, I usually let the kids take the artwork home with them because I never keep it. But I'm dealing with homeless kids, so they had no home to take the art to. So once these programs start becoming successful, they're always suspiciously defunded, and that program was becoming real successful, and so therefore it got cut. And so when I was cleaning out, abruptly got cut, so when I was trying to clean out the studio room, I found a stack of prints with no home to go to. And I hate wasting material or anything, and this is all 100% rag paper. And I probably didn't have any paper for like a year or so, so I kind of thought, well, I'm going to take this paper and honor, maybe that's what you're talking about, and I'm going to honor these children. And I kind of took their work and painted on top of it because, and that was a series that I did, I called that series Raw Nerve, and there were like a bunch of face paintings. And it's kind of, so in that sense, yeah, they did inspire me. It was maybe the energy that they had left, because some of it had like little wrinkles and smudges, and I painted on top of that, and I did. And so you're right, I guess they did. But it wasn't these particular images per se, but it was just the experience. These are my life experiences. You know, I draw and I paint and I work about real life, day-to-day stuff that we all deal with, you know, and that just happens to be one of the elements, you know. And, you know, because at the same time, that same few years that I was teaching that, like I said, so-called underprivileged, and then at the same week or the same next day or something, I'm working with overprivileged kids at Otis, you know, art school, you know, and then you have the other extremity, you know, because some of those kids are equally as damaged, but they just have a lot more money, you know. It's, anyway, so this piece, Little Gold Man, this is probably one of the early ones also.
Can I ask Diane, where do you start compositionally on something like that?
That one? Yeah. This is really funny because it's insane. This is like, you know, this is like, it's almost like I described that one as like everything wrong you could do in a composition, in a painting, and even color, palette, like everything wrong is, this is a perfect example of everything not to do. But then but for some reason, people loved it and it worked out and people exhibited this piece all over the place. But it's a mess. It's a total mess. Compositionally, it's like everything wrong. Like I swear, I could draw like, you know, if I use it like, you know, put circles and don't do this, don't do that kind of thing on this piece. So it totally cracks me up. And that's just from an artist, you know what I mean? I'm like, and I'm not like dogging my own work, but it is. But you're absolutely right because it makes absolutely no sense. And what happened was for me, that was like my life was also making no sense. I go in and out of situations in my world. And it's like, you know, there are times when I've had like really large studios. And then there's times where like, you know, this basically top is like the size of my studio, you know, and at this particular time I was moving out of a really large studio and I was moving into a much smaller space in Highland Park, where I lived in this Highland Park part of Los Angeles for a little while. So I took, you know, so here I was taking a giant studio worth of work and cramming it into a space probably this size. So it's like everything, my entire life was cluttered, you know, and so I think I was feeling really, really, really crammed. And that's also around the same time I met the Mascarasco back here. Those are our Troy days, you know what I mean? And it was like really, really funny. So even though my life was going through all these kind of crazy complications and like ridiculous, it's just growing, just living, you know, it's like life in LA. And but it was also 90, 91, 92, which is Troy Cafe, which is another place that kind of was a hot spot in LA for a little bit. And a place for performance artists, musicians. A lot of my old musician friends that we lost from the 70s and 80s, we had already kind of disbanded. We kind of went into our old lives, you know, like some getting married, some having kids, some having sex changes, some doing all kinds of stuff. Rehab, reborn, jail, whatever, you know. It was all that stuff. And then like about 10 years or so later, we end up, you know, back finding each other back at Troy Cafe, where once again, I run into Rudy Medina from the Brad, or Alice Bragg finally came back to East LA after doing the Hollywood thing. And then Tito, got outed for not originally being from East LA. So it was like kind of cool because like 10 years later, we're all 10 years older. We all meet kind of back at Troy Cafe, and then I meet people like, you know, my dear friend Tomas Carrasco and Chicano Secret Service and all that stuff happening, you know. It was just a really exciting time. But meanwhile, back at my place in Highland Park, the upstairs level of a beautiful craftsman-style home, but I was crammed into, at one point, it was the size of the place was originally the master bedroom for one house, but then it had been subdivided into like a little renter thing. So I literally lived in a master bedroom for like a little while. And that's pretty much it. And at that time, I also had like a revolving, I had like an open door policy. So people would come at my place. It was insane. It was like a real funny kind of time and period of my life. It's like people would come and crash there all the time. And because, you know, that's, we do that, you know. And that was me kind of paying back for all the years I slept on people's couches and, you know, stuff like that.
Your own space, or
yeah, it is a little bit. It is a little bit my own space, even though it's not. So it's kind of like a self portrait. Like I actually had a fireplace, like right here.
Uh-huh.
I actually had a fireplace, which I missed the most. So mm-hmm. with the mantle, but and then there was this weird thing with windows. But it's not really. You know what I mean? Like it's not really. But yeah, I did. You know what it was? I must have been sitting here. There was a table here, and then I must have been looking because what I see here, there was a fireplace by the door and a wall. But the rest of this is made up, because this is just coming out of my own head, because I was actually probably sitting at that table that was literally here. So yes and no. Yes and no. But I still like it. I mean, the color palette, you know, in those days I was still dealing a lot with color and stuff. Right now, more black and white has been kind of the color palette I've been working with. But I really dug the, you know, the palette. And then these guys look like, this one here, this guy here. He kind of looks like the kind of guys I grew up around, like my dad's generation or my uncles, you know what I mean? And guys, and people used to really dress up, even if it was just to go get a gallon of milk, you know, they'd get all decked out, hanging out, just to go get, you know. And so that was that, you know, or some of these ladies. And then I've also done a lot of costume and makeup over the years also, you know, like and stage stuff. And so I, you know, like with Oscar, I did a lot of that stuff. And even before that, I worked with a lot of performers from, yeah, costume, wardrobe, backdrop. And some of these other people are more just like some of the other characters that I've kind of worked with over the years, you know, like I said, from everything, like, you know, sword swallowers to disappearing artists to, like, you know, mass murderers and whatever. You know, it's L.A. and it's a group of people. But yeah.
So, Diane, is this, because I've never seen the print itself.
You haven't seen the print itself?
I've seen reproduction. So is this the closest color?
Yeah, the color.
This is really good.
This is good. You've done a really good job. Like, I was even commenting on the reproductions that are in the hallway. Oh, by the way, too, those are reproductions of the actual prints. So those are clones of my prints. But the color is pretty close there. I mean, superb on the color here.
I don't think anyone has reproduced it that vividly.
No, they haven't. They haven't. I'm real happy with it. Really happy. And then I was doing a lot of body stuff, like a lot of body painting, body modifications. I've done a lot of stuff with, like, body imagery, you know what I mean? So you could see kind of a little bit of that, like even the paper. So it's a little bit of everything, you know? Plus I was moving, so I think everything was kind of coming in, like all the costumes and the makeup and the this and the that. But and for some reason, this piece got real popular. It's been published more probably than any of them. It traveled more. You know, but I think that was also a state of what was happening with the Atelier program at the time. It was very active in getting the work out there. Like the plan was to get the works out there in a global scale, to keep it all numbered, to keep it all archived. And the original plan was, even back then, you know, working with Sister Karen and working on this fine art program, was to make enough money generated off the prints to buy the building. That was the original plan. So, of course, I was, like, beyond heartbroken when I found out what really happened to the building and the fact that after a while, especially after Sister Karen's death, like, the print collection kind of took a real dive and people just started using prints as bar, you know, trading them for opera tickets and for self gain. A lot of selfishness went on and a lot of ripping off of prints, which you were talking about, like, that happens everywhere. And I think what happens is it took, like, a really bad turn with what was going on with the print collection. And like I said, and I know that's a real harsh statement, but that's a reality. That's kind of what happened. You know, the stuff just got really unorganized. I mean, people would literally walk in. I mean, I saw it with my own eyes. People would literally walk in, see a flat file with prints and roll a few up and walk out the door with prints. I mean, it just turned into like a really, really, really bad scene over there. And so, like I said, around this time is when things were actually doing really, really well. And nowadays, I don't know what's happening now. I honestly...
Well, I'm on the board. It's much better.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Then we need to sit and talk, so maybe I could work with these people again. Because for a while. You know, anyway. And talk about that. Like, on the other hand, this is one piece. This is actually kind of weird. You actually did a beautiful job because actually the reproduction looks better than the original art. You know, I guess computers are good for something after all. Well, once again, this is kind of weird because the color is really off. And like me, I'm bringing my craziest critic on this. Like, I was also, like, this to me doesn't really work. And very often, as a mentor for a lot of people doing the prints, I did a lot of things where my print ended up suffering so that somebody else's piece could look better. And to me, that's all part of the whole educational process. To me, that's where I'm coming from. So this particular time, there was another artist that was not ready, because it takes a long time, and unless you're really focused, you are not ready to go into the print. You have X amount of days, you got to be so ready, you got to be right on it. You have the printer there, you know, because next week somebody else is coming in. And if you're not prepared, you're going to have a very unsuccessful print and a really bad time. And I think at this point, they knew I'm like really good on my color separation, and somebody was really not up to par. They were struggling with the color separation, and so I sort of jumped the gun, and I went in there before I was really ready to go. They also, funding did not come in, so there was no ink, no color, so I basically had to take colors that were in just a few cans, so that kind of happened. Plus, we didn't have the proper supply, so I had to use acetate from two different sources. And when it comes to something this technical, you really have to be precise. And what happened was I used two different types of acetates from two different companies, two different parts of the world, and they didn't match up. So to me, there's a lot of misregistration on there. And like I said, unless I bring it to your attention, you probably won't notice it. Yeah. But now that I mentioned it, you're going to see it, because I see it all over. I mean, it got to the point where, you know, the way it works out with self-help prints is like the Atelier program. What we do is we print them there. They print them. We work with the master printer. And the way the edition gets broken up, because editions are not very large. We used to start off with 100 sheets of paper. You could lose a lot in the printing, so you're lucky if you get maybe 75 or 70 prints that you can actually sign and number. You know, and that's just part of the way that medium works. It's a really wonderful medium. So therefore, it's like a real limited edition of fine art prints. There's only so many. And with this one, and then what we do is so many go to the collection, which you have part of the collection. You get numbers here, and a couple other collections. Some go for exhibition, and then what's left of the remaining, we split it 50-50 with self-help graphics, so the artist gets half the edition, self-help gets the other half, and then we basically do what we want with our edition. And I'm like admitting it here, I've never admitted it to anybody before, but I really dislike this print so much that I think my prints, I just cut them up, and I cut parts out that I liked. Yeah, I cut them. I just like hated it so. Oops, wait a minute. I hated it so much that I think, I cut it up, and I just.
What part did you like?
Let's see. I liked his head. I cut his head out, and I stuck it on a purse. And I was doing some other stuff, and then, I cut that out, and I put it somewhere else. And I cut him out, and I put him somewhere else, and. I don't know, and then I used the rest for scrap material, for scrap paper, for collaging and stuff. So, which is not, I mean, I don't recommend it. Believe me, I don't recommend it to anybody. But that's what I was feeling at the time. I like I said, I was so unhappy that I ended up taking scissors to it. And that's okay too, because as a creator, I can also be the destroyer. But you can't. You know, that's a good thing about art. It's like really sweet. You know, it's like you could go fix your house, you know, you can have a fit and trash your own house, but I can't go to your house and trash it. It's kind of the same thing. Kind of like that. Or you could beat yourself up, but don't go around beating up
everybody. I'm always fascinated the way artists have the relationship they have with their work, because it's not what I anticipate, you know?
Right.
So you're not the first artist that I know that has a print that they've cut up. And the first time I heard it, I almost died. I almost fell over, gasping for breath. So I've been prepared.
That's pretty funny, though.
And then people who work in the mural media, they're like, oh, yeah, you got graffiti done. Well, it was the process that was important.
Yeah, that's...
So I'm just fascinated by this, you know, it's not the relationship that I would anticipate,
right?
And I'm not sure I can appreciate it or understand it, but I'm trying.
But that's really great, though. But see, but I understand there's also 50% of the edition that's being preserved.
Yes.
So it's safe, you know. But right, for me, it's right. Like I didn't care. The other one that did freak me out is like with the first one, the little gold man. The other one, I remember gifting it. Like I said, just being an artist is like, you know, whatever, you can think whatever you want out of it. But it's not an easy living, and I do not recommend it for the weak in any means, you know. And I've always had to work to support my, you know, work to buy the supplies to make the shows, to show the arts, or you know, whatever, you know, all that kind of thing. And sometimes things get really slim. You know, and things, you know, you can also go kind of mad being an artist because things get really, life is really rough, you know. And so over the years, I've also used my prints as bartering, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't have rent, but will you take a piece of art, or I need my car fixed, or you take a piece of art, you know, that kind of thing. My art has always been like a bartering chip over the years. And I remember, or gift, you know what I mean? I don't have money for a gift, so I give them a piece of art. I've given away so much art, it's like insane. I don't do that anymore. I'll go make them a mud pie instead, you know. It's like, I don't do that anymore. But I do remember one time I did give somebody a... I did give somebody a print, you know, somebody that thought they should have art in their home. They know me, I make art, whatever. And they didn't have any, I don't know, they had some weird... like something, I don't know, it's not art on their wall, but I just thought, you know, you should have some artwork because, you know, you're embarrassing me. I don't like going, it's like really bad, you know. And then I remember going in there and I gave them this, you know, and I tried to explain to them, this is a print, limited edition, this is only so many, it was on exhibit going around the world and all that kind of stuff. And they're like, yeah, they're really excited. And then I give it to them, I wrap it, I try to be real careful, you know, glassine the whole bit, more, you know, the whole like white gloves, and I'm telling them how to handle a print, a fine art print. You know, and then time goes by, and then I run across, where'd you put it? Oh, you got to come and see the work, you know, whatever. I'd like to see, because you know, it's really nice to be able to see where your work is placed, how they choose. To, you know, it's really weird how it's weird when people take art into their home. It's a very personal thing, and I take it really personal. And then they're like, oh, yeah, and they're getting all excited and walking in the door, and they're going, yeah. I go, where'd you get a frame? You know, because, you know, with the framer, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah, I had an old frame in the garage, but your print didn't fit. So I cut it to fit the print. And I'm like, okay, now that one I did freak out because I just thought, you, I can't even say the word right now. You know what I mean? It was like they just really didn't. And they, oh, yeah, and they wanted me to go in there and sign my name again because they had cut off my signature, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, yeah, I think that's kind of like where, those are like some of the moments where you can actually end a friendship because it's kind of like, I'm like, you know, I won't say the word, but you can imagine what I said to them. You know, I'm not going to sign that. You just, you know, yeah, they cut it to fit in a frame, you know, so that's something else, you know, that is something else. But anyway, so that's, I guess, the story, moral of that story is don't cut your fine art prints, you know, unless they're your own, you know. Okay, this is the one, right? This is another one.
I only have one question.
Where's the fly?
Yes.
I could give you a hint.
Please.
Malathion baby. Malathion baby. Okay. I don't know where it's at. I forgot. It flew. I don't know. It moved. But anyway, this one was in response to the malathion spraying that was going around for many, 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 many years, you know. And anyway, malathion baby. And I think not only just malathion, but other kinds of pesticides and like horrific chemical warfare that we are being attacked with. I kind of figured at some point we'll start morphing and turning into something else. But I'll be straight up with you, Karen. Let's see if I remember. It's up in here somewhere. Okay, you got to look in there somewhere. You got to look in there. It's in one of these little, and it doesn't really look.
I wasn't looking there.
Yeah, all it's right. In there somewhere.
That was
on
the shoulder.
Yeah, you see? That's, oh, or somewhere else?
On the shoulder of the guy on the left.
Kind of yeah, that's like so funny, because you probably did see another fly. There could be two or three flies in there that I didn't even know it. You know, but anyway, that's kind of funny. Yeah, that one's kind of weird. That's a really large print. It's really large, so once again, you know, we're working on a much larger scale. So to do color separation, I mean, you got to really do it on a light box. It's a very physical thing to do color separation. I mean, all artwork is, but this is like you got to be right on it. It's registration. There's a light box hitting you in the face. It's an intense, and I love the medium. I absolutely love it. I mean, I was born to do color separation.
Maybe you could talk just a little bit about the technique, because I know something about mm-hmm. the technique, but, you know, give me a little bit more. Color separation, you're working with...
You're working with, like, okay, you come up with your... I hope this isn't boring people. Like, it's real technical, but I love talking about it. Okay, yeah, you're taking an image. So, for instance, you have, like, an image or an idea or concept of what you're working with. in this case with the color, with the, let's use another print, maybe something else.
But the major point is that each image is, each color is an image.
Yeah.
So you got to really.
Well, it's, yeah, each one, yeah, so you're, like each one, like the purple is
but
one.
You're looking on this, right. The name of the material you're using that you.
It's an acetate, so it's a clear, it's like a clear plastic, it bends, so it's clear, so you're putting image on top, so you're doing layer on top of layer, and so each color has a different, so each color, like say just the yellow, one sal, they call it a sal, or like, I call it an acetate, so it's just yellow, just the yellow, the next is just the black, the next is just the red, and then it's also the matter of the order you place it, because if you're doing color, if you're doing overlays, which is something I try to teach, I've taught a lot of people, like, if you just do straight colors, that's one thing. But if you learn how to use transparent, semi-translucent, opaque, you know, like I said, this is all technical stuff, but this is like, you know, what these things entail. They're really insane. So if you know what you're doing with color and you know how to overlay color, you could take the orange and then, of course, put a blue, you're creating a green. So out of two colors, you're creating three. But if you have like a beige underneath, you could, all of a sudden you're doing four, five, or six out of three colors. I know how to do all those tricks. I could... You know, it's like rabbits out of the hat kind of thing, but it takes a lot of skill. It's like really crazy, but anyway, and then it's also the order you lay it in, because if you might put, say, if you do the wrong order, it could be an unsuccessful print. So this stuff is really super technical. It's actually really fun, and it's like really insane. Like for me, it's really great because my world can get all chaotic, but that stuff really grounds me. And then you got to register it. This thing called registration. So you have target marks. Usually it's working on a triangle. I use three targets, and it's kind of like you kind of place them like almost like in a triangle where you, on top of like doing the overlays, you have to make sure that they match exactly, because once they burn the screen, that's just part of it. So now you got your image, all that stuff. And to me, it's like a mental game. And I think Joe Alpuche, who's the printer there now, he knows me already because he laughs, because I'm the one, I come in, with all my overlays written, and I just flop it down. Let's go, Joe. Come on, Joe. Let's get to work, you know. And he trips out because most people are kind of still working and they're printing because they're trying to see. But to me, I do this thing where I kind of lay it out in my head. I kind of see it in my head. So I don't know what that is. Maybe just from so many years that I've been doing it, and it's kind of like a game. I turn it into like a game where I see it in my head. There's a name for it. Some doctor. No, I don't know what it is. I don't know. That's not what they called it. I think it was something else. But it was this thing where I do like a total. So it's like a mind game that I do with myself, where I actually do it. But and anybody that knows me during color separation time, that's where I kind of turn into a hermit, because I totally go into like, I'm like a mad scientist by that point. You know, it's like total mad scientist thing that I do, and where I actually see the whole thing in my head, and it's like really funny. And Joe, the printer who's there now, just loves it because I come in. And I'm like, come on, Joe, come on. You know, so we kind of joke around in the shop. It's really, really fun because it's like, come on, you know. Because I'm just kind of sitting there waiting for him to burn a screen and approve it, whatever. You know what I mean? And I get to talk to people as they kind of come in and out of the studio, you know. But and then what I'm normally doing, once again, because it is an educational kind of process, what I end up usually doing is I'm helping other artists that are getting ready to do their, you know what I mean? But it's insane. When I go on that, I'm like, it's so precise. It's like so, and then talking about music that I listen to, you know, by that time, it's usually like Bach or like, you know, it's usually something, I'll listen to, I don't know what, but it's like, it's definitely not your punk or like heavy, it's not like hard metal or anything like that. Cause it's like my hand, you know, gets a little bit too crazy, or I'm listening to something either, you know, or what's that's where the, you know, Chinese opera comes in or something, you know what I mean? Because I need something that's a different type of music. And I'm in a different place. And it's almost like getting a tattoo. It's like I actually work my body to get there. If I know, if I know I'm going to be doing that, I know I need, you know, juicing, exercising. Because like even the cutting of the hand, you know, the hand and the muscles, I don't really exercise much, but even with the printmaking, I'll actually use dumbbells a little bit, you know, just to kind of work the muscles in my arm, because the swivel blade, I mean, you're so precise. I mean, that's how tight this, and that's how serious I take it as well. You know what I mean? It's like I just do the little hand exercises, because you can't wimp out in the middle of a cut or in the middle of a line, you know. But I appreciate you asking that question, because it's like really, it's insane. It's insane. But it's really beautiful.
See a third dimension on that.
Yes.
That's three-dimensional.
In
fact,
that's from the overlay. So what I call that, I'm creating an optical illusion. And it's like, and it's really interesting because, and it's great. I think the more, especially with me explaining to what's going on, I think people passing by, they don't really get it. They don't really get it. But if you start getting, if you start understanding, because what you're probably seeing right now is you're seeing the colors underneath the colors, mm-hmm. what you're seeing, you know. And I think, and like I said, that unless you really know about it, you're probably not going to catch it. You say there was something about that print, or there's something, you know. But it's not a subliminal like they do on television. That's a whole other thing. You know what I mean? But it's there, and it starts kind of creating this three-dimensional thing. You know, but it's
what year is this? The one that's part of the series outside.
Yeah,
it's non-human, if you want to call it that.
You know, see, that's really interesting because that was during my reptilian series that I was doing. It had to be in the 80s. That was like my early 80s reptilian series. I was doing like this whole thing like with lizards and cold-blooded. I did cold-blooded paper fashions and all this stuff dealing with like. Yeah, I just told us the whole reptilian kind of thing. And yeah, that's part of the reptilian series that I was doing for a while. Yeah, so it's like lizards, kind of like lizards, street lizards. And yeah, it's so funny though, because it is probably one of my only, because I do figure painting that's like a non-human or humanoid type figure, you know. Anyway. And then this is one of the first ones. This is like, this is 83. We had the first atelier in 1982. But like I said, I was teaching everybody how to do color separation because nobody knew how to do color separation. So I didn't participate in the first one as far as a print goes, but we were kind of getting the program off the ground. And this is only like three colors or something like that, or four, five colors maybe. And in those days, we're still working it out. So we're putting the information. Still, this is where I'm still battling with Sister Karen. It's like, no, you don't put that kind of text on a fine art print. So I was still arm wrestling with Sister Karen back then, you know. But in a way, I'm glad because to have all the artists that were participating and all that kind of stuff. And we're still kind of working out the bugs, like even how to sign a print, how to number a print, you know. Even a chop. I don't even think we had a chop yet. A chop is called where it like it shows the authenticity of a print, you know. So it's like you'll sign it, and then the studio, in this case Self-Help Graphics, has what they call a chop. And once you curate and you number the prints, and everybody and the artist approves the number, the edition stuff, and once it's all signed and numbered, they put the chop, which is an indent, which is a like an emboss on the piece. You know prints, because I know you know prints medium, huh? And yes, we chopped the print. I don't even think we had a chop back then. We're still working that out. You might go back and look.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think we had it yet.
I'm curious, in all of your years of doing prints there, do you number them by the one that went first, or do you number them by
Oops, sorry, I messed up again.
The one you love gets the number one?
Okay, that's enough. Okay, now that's, I love it, because that you are the one that should be asking that question. Because like I said, this stuff is so technical. It's like so beautiful, but I'm like I said, I
know.
No, but I have followed all, like I said, I've done all the research on printmaking since the beginning of printmaking and all that stuff. Now, the way it goes, like, see, now that's where there's kind of, it gets kind of interesting, because to be really, really, and trying to get self-help to, like, be that sharp is like, you know, wrestling a King Kong. You know, it's like insane. So the way it should be done is they should all go under the squeegee in sequence every time. So when you put, if the first one that goes under the squeegee should always be number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way to 100. But, you know, people get lazy and they just start stacking them and racking them and tearing them, and, you know, this rack goes there, and they don't really pay as much, thank you, as much attention as they should. I don't know how, I know how other people, they do, because in reality also, the way it works out is, if you want to put like a dollar value on artwork, let's go with 100, say you do 100 prints. The higher numbers, like 99, 100 or whatever, personally, I kind of let those ones go first, because the lower number, 1, 2, 3, those are the more valuable ones. So anybody that collects prints, just keep that in mind. If you can, you know, because a lot of artists don't even know this, but it's kind of like, or even studios don't even know this, but it's like the lower number is probably the most valuable. So keep that in mind. So if you have a much lower number of a print, or if you have if you're trying to pick up a print, try to get the lower number.
So this one's 4 of 45.
Yeah, 4 of 45.
Oh, yeah, so that's the ones in your collection are 1, 2,
Yeah. And I try to explain that, you know, like I said, but a lot of artists, you know, not only, well, this is also something that I'm writing about, you know, like I said, part of the process and some of the technique and like, you know, like I said, I know it may sound pretty boring, but it's really not. It's like, you know, it's you know, I guess it's like the number one child, you know, by the time they have five kids, they don't really care anymore. You know, it's like kind of like that. I guess that's what that's... Sorry.
The last of the run. You know, like if the artist is so darn good, the last of the run is just as good as the... And I know there's many people who are like that.
And yeah, but in reality, unfortunately, self-help doesn't keep that good track. So it's like, you know... You can have one mix of 10, mix of this. There's not, yeah, that, like I said, I tried. I fought with, you know, everybody, but, you know. But, yeah, but that's the way it should be done. And I know some people do that, like what they'll do, because I've seen it with my own eyes. What they will do is they'll start sifting through prints and then, you know, put the, you know, they do that. I've seen it with my own eyes. You're not supposed to do that, but, the, you know, that's just me being like all crazy about it. But yeah, they will do that sometimes. I used to, the way I do it is I kind of go off the rack, we count. I don't scramble them. I don't scramble them at all. Otherwise, it starts getting too crazy because others even start going, well, these ones are going to me, so I'm going to get the better ones for me and I'm going to give them the dud ones and that kind of thing. You know, but that just starts getting, that doesn't hurt. That doesn't help anybody. You know, I think they should just kind of go out all over the place.
These are the unknown ones,
yeah. And these are more, these are really unknown because they're actually even more than images. They're not even, I would even look at it and I go, that doesn't even look like my art because it wasn't even so much that it's my art per se. What those are more educational pieces. I was showing people different ways of using a brush, different ways of using a pen, different ways of using, like, how to color. So I think these are even more educational. These ones are 86. Yeah, and what I did, see, like, that one just says, that shouldn't even exist. That's but it does. You know, that one I kind of like, you know, but, yeah, and that, what I was showing also is how to quarter a page. Because, you know, there were what we did there at that point, we were going to one sheet, but I was showing, well, instead of doing just one big print, you can also keep in mind you could maybe cut your piece of paper in four and do that. So once again, that's where I sacrificed my own artwork to show other people how to do other things. You know, I mean, they're okay, but they just look so weird to me. And it's also one of those things, too, where I wasn't really supposed to print, but somebody wasn't really ready. So I must have knocked all this out like the night before, which I do not recommend. But that's why the series came out the way it did. And I don't mind. You know what I mean? I don't mind. I think that's all part of the process. But I think that'll... They came out. I like that guy a lot. That one I don't like. I just straight up don't like it. And that's okay too. She's my puppet. Once we get into oldies again too, it's like, you know, that whole song is like, I'm your puppet. So this was kind of based on a song, you know, and then the whole thing about she's my puppet. So, you know, he's feeding her alcohol and has his hand inside her, like, severed body. She's like, oops. Anyway, do you have any more questions? How long have I been talking? Okay, do you have any more questions? But you can hear the technical aspect. I mean, I absolutely love printmaking. You could tell. I'm like a fiend. I love it. I love the whole color separation aspect. It's such a unique medium. And there's been a lot of people.
I don't know how much time we have, but when you were talking about your attention to detail and be able to see three dimensionally in your head before you even do anything.
Uh-huh, because it's all black. By the time you're done, it just looks like a black mass.
It made sense to me what I know about pin up and down, because that, you know, starts out as a 12 images and goes to 360, right?
Yes.
And when I talked to you about it, you were working on more than one at the same time.
See, well, that's a different thing. See, every medium is different. Like, every medium is different. Like, you know, you people are getting a lot of my secrets, but this is such a wonderful program. I don't mind telling some of my secrets. But even as an artist, you know, I it's like every medium is, like I said, I miss oil painting. You know, like I said, I don't have a studio right now, so oil painting requires a well-ventilated place, somewhere you're going to be at for a long time, because, you know, it takes a certain... Basically, it takes money to be working in oil, because you have to be able to be stable. So, but for me, when I work in oil, I would go into a place where it is like an altered state. I would go into a zone. Something about oil paint will take me to zone, and I'm like real serious with oil painting. It's a different medium, the smell, the setup, everything about it, right? but there's a level of concentration where when I do oil painting, I literally, it's almost like going into a different dimension when I'm oil painting. I mean, that's where my head goes. That's where I can start painting, and I think I'm going to work for 2 or 3 hours, and 12 hours later, I kind of come up for air, and it's like even time. I won't say it's missing time. It's just something else warps time. So that's how I am with oil painting. But the pinups and the pin downs, it's ink on vellum. So I'm using Indian ink on vellum, which is a completely different medium. And the vellum is like a really nice paper, almost like a thick tracing paper. It's a really beautiful paper, but you can't mess up. Indian ink on paper, you can't miss. But those, I'm working on several at a time. That's a different kind of like insanity, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, I call that more like, I go into more like a fragmentation or fragmented state, where I'm like kind of jittery. I'm going from one drawing to another drawing to another drawing to another drawing. And I think that is like, my head is kind of doing this like a glitch, like a weird other thing happening. But also it served the medium, not only the ink on vellum, but also the subject matter, because the subject matter are pinups, which is the male figure. I've done a twist on what you're used to, like the regular pinups that we know are like, you know, the Betty Page or the bomb, you know, bomb, whatever, girls and all that kind of stuff. And which, you know, obviously I enjoy the female body, but I like guys, you know what I mean? And it's like, so for me, the pinups, I put a spin on it. And what I did is I've taken the male figure and looked at him as a subject rather than an object. So I kind of did a whole spin on all the pinup thing. But it also, like, at first it was kind of fun. I go, okay, do all these, like, you know, once again, I talked about nudes and drawings and all this kind of stuff. But then I started realizing after, like, you know, after 20 drawings or 50 drawings, after 100 pinups, you know, by that time all the labor is fragmented, kind of switching, you know, I started going real chaotic in the head. And then what it did is it made me go into, like, this really in-depth analysis of, like, all my screwed-up relationships with guys. So it was, like, real therapeutic in that sense, where it just, like, made me really have to look at myself more than anything. Because, you know, I might be working on a drawing, but then I have the drawing, I'll figure it out. But then at a certain point, that just becomes labor. I already know, because now I just have to spend another 100 hours on this goddamn, you know, so the only thing you go is in your head. Where else are you going to go? You know what I mean? And so what that did is it made me really kind of, so that was like, talk about therapy. The pinups was probably the most therapeutic kind of work I've ever done, you know? And it's, you know, kind of funny. And it's funny now, not when I was doing them, but it's like funny now. But yeah, so that's more like fragmentation. And then with the color separation, that's a whole other place. That's just like almost, that I have to work at, that definitely very nocturnal. I like, especially in LA, which has such a buzz going on all the time, I actually have to work at night when the city sort of calms down a little bit, because even just traffic and noise and trucks and helicopters and la insanity, you know, or people's energy, this stuff I have to kind of do more at night, where a more controlled environment, you know, it's like eating magic mushrooms. You have to do it under a controlled environment, you know, kind of like that, you know, which is best outcome, you know. But yeah, I love these questions. These are fantastic. But you kind of get the idea of like how it makes an artist tick or whatever, you know? Or even with the photographs, that's a whole other scene because they're interacting with people. And then this stuff, I could become very isolated. Between oil painting, my pinups, and my color separation, I'm a fiend. I love making art. And it would be real easy for me to just become a hermit somewhere and go hide out and make art. It's real easy to do. But I have to support myself, so I do have to interact with the world and get a job and pay for all that stuff. So kind of this whole weird thing, it's like, especially if I'm on a roll making artwork, I'm kind of, but then you got to go work with homeless kids that are coming up dead in snuff films. You know, it's like this whole mind thing happens, you know. And so what I try to do sometimes is I'll try to work to save enough money to pay the rent, to pay in advance, like for X amount of time, give myself a block of time, because the ideal way to make art would be to have that block of time to really focus, get the work done, which is not always the opportunity, but, you know, I have done that in the past, and right now I'm trying to get myself back into that place again. But right now the new medium is writing, so that's like, it's time for me to write. So it's like, it's really interesting because I'm switching it up again, you know what I mean, taking it on, and this is like a real interesting one. So I've never felt a level of excitement, and like I said, like I mentioned earlier, I feel like, you know, taking baby steps in steel toe boots, you know, it's a real interesting place to be, and I like it, but it's like a constant challenge to myself, and as a life long dedicated artist, this is kind of cool. It's like I'm totally digging all of this.
I How do you know when to switch it up?
When to switch it up? Yeah. It depends. Like, it's always different. Maybe I have a deadline. I have a show coming up. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, a lot of it kind of depends on, like, what's happening. You know, like, do I have an exhibition coming up? You know, and other times just kind of feel it out. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, if I was that lucky, it would be nice to be able to just kind of let it flow. But I don't have that kind of luxury. You know, I'm not like independently wealthy where I could just kind of do that. You know, but it would be nice. But I don't know. Maybe, you know, I'm not dead yet, so we'll see.
Do you ever have like a piece where you decided you were going to do it in one medium and then you kind of change it to another?
Yeah, that happens.
And like, what usually prompts that is, because I mean, I know sometimes if you're going to be in a show that's like, you know, you're going to make a painting, maybe you're going to do a print, but when it's, like, your own projects and your own
choice of
medium, you, like, kind of change that? Like, what's been the reason for you?
Usually, if I change medium, I like to experiment with different mediums and play with different mediums. And it was earlier on, like, some of the earlier works, I did a lot of mixed media where I would, you know, but then again, I was living in a different place. Back then, you know, I had like 3,000, 4,000 square foot, 5,000 square foot studios, you know, with lumber yards and every kind of tool around. So back, you know, if I have that kind of, if I'm in that situation, I have access to certain things so I could play with certain materials. You know what I mean? So back then I was using, you know, I had access to an entire, you know, super shop, what they called it, you know, like every kind of drill and nail and whatever you could do. So I played a lot with that. So, yeah, I normally, if I know I'm going to be working on an exhibition, I usually have, like, all that stuff kind of predetermined, you know. But a lot of times it depends. Sometimes it doesn't always work out. Like, if I go out of town, say, to do a paper fashion, you know, maybe when I'm here in town, I have all my stuff, but I might go out of town and I forget my stapler. I'm like, I have to have one of the, they call it plier stapler. It's like a metal, and it's hard. They're hard to find now. I actually have to go to Sacramento to get my. I had one, and I think, and it was so weird. After a million staples, the thing just went boop, and it died. And I'm like, oh my god, I'm in the middle of this paper fashion I'm doing, and I couldn't use like a regular stapler, and I couldn't find one, and I panicked. I literally panicked because I was like over a stapler. Believe it or not, it was like really weird. And I went looking all over the place for a stapler, and then I had to have one shipped in. I couldn't find it anywhere, and I had one shipped in just to get the stuff done. But like, so something like that, I'll sort of have to improvise. Maybe that's when I change it up more, as if I have to improvise, you know, or my check didn't clear. You know, somebody could send me a bum check and I had this thing, and then the check didn't come or didn't, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, I was going to do all these fancy oil paintings and I don't have shit, and I end up having to like work on butcher paper with a dirt rock or something, you know. It's like, that happens too, you know. Or the opposite, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I kind of, you know, somebody ends up in the nut house and they leave all their art supplies there, and I'm just like, good supplies, and I'll kind of work with them. Yeah. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
What did you start getting into art? And I mean, like, when did you know you have the artist within?
My whole life. I believe I was born with it. I told the experience earlier, like my first drawing, and I'll mention, some of you might have heard that already, you heard that already, but my first drawing, I wasn't talking or walking yet, and I was sitting in the high chair at the house, in our house, and they kept sticking this little fake rabbit, like a stuffed bunny, on my little high chair thing, that table. But I remember looking at a real rabbit outside the door, so I was already making a connection between like real and synthetic kind of thing. But I couldn't say rabbit, and I kept throwing the thing off, and they kept putting it on, I kept throwing it off, putting it up. And then about the third time I threw this thing off, my dad, who, like I said, I learned a lot from, my dad just stuck a piece of paper in front of me and gave me a pen. And with the red ballpoint pen on yellow ruled paper and holding the pen like that, I drew the rabbit, trying to communicate with them, trying to communicate. So I was one, or maybe around one. So I've just always done it. But I remember that point so distinctly, because I was trying to communicate via telepathy, but no one was getting it. So I had to use like a visual. So my first communication was actually a visual representation, you know. But I just always done it, and I've stuck with it, you know. I have my first solo exhibition at 5, blah 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 blah, you know. So it's like, yeah, and it's just been like a constant. Thank you for asking. Mm-hmm. Thank you for asking. I hope this is informative. You know, the prints. Thank you. thank all of you for coming out. I really appreciate everybody here. I've just been having such a fantastic time, you know, across the board. I mean, George, again, George Lipsis is like, man, you know. And like I said, the girls that I met last night in your class, they interviewed me before I came here on the, for the radio. It was sweet, sweet, across the board. And all of you, yeah, art, just love art, you know, art. It's hard. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of hard work, and you know, and I appreciate that you people understand it. So thank you.